What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Bad Weather Podcast. I am your host, Jonathan Miller. This is The Sound of My Voice. This is a repost from a Season 1 episode. In this episode, we talk about co-parenting, jealousy, defensiveness, all things relating to dealing with your ex after a divorce. So check it out. I think there's a lot of helpful stuff in here. Also wanted to pop in and mention that episodes on the Bad Weather After Dark feed are slowly trickling out. This week you will see a movie review of a classic, getting married and inviting three dudes to find out which one is your dad movie called Mamma Mia. We reviewed that to our own chagrin, talked about that, had a special guest on, so head over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to check it out. You'll get the first week for free there, so give it a listen, see what you think. That feed will be more of a mix of entertainment content like movie reviews, but also a little more open dialogue between JP and myself with some special guests and additional divorce stories and things like that. Other than that, thanks for listening. Take very good care of yourself and enjoy. What do you got, Hurley? Energy drink? We'll talk about it on the pod. Save it for the pod.
Save it for the pod, they say. Let's do it live.
Everything sucks. Just kidding. Everything is great. No, really, I haven't thought about my ex today. Oh, wait. Fuck, I just did. But I went outside.
Hey, everybody. This is the Bad Weather Podcast. Yet another episode for your ears. We're going to pour it right in there. I'm one of the hosts, JP Hurley. Also joining me this week is Brian Burns. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, everybody. Hey, JP. Hey, John.
Welcome back. Thanks. We're doing it.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Hope to have some interesting conversation today, some words of wisdom, some good stories.
Our conversation is always interesting. At least that's what we continue to tell ourselves.
I typically find myself interesting, which feels a bit vain, but I also like if you can't find yourself to be good company for yourself, then man, that would be a hard existence. So
yeah,
I'm good with it.
I like that. Also joining this week, Jonathan Miller. What's going on, John?
This is the sound of my voice.
There it is.
This week I am enjoying an orange mango sparkling ice water. Goes down smooth. How about you? What are you having?
Goes down smooth. Is that their slogan? Sparkling ice?
Yep. Sparkling ice goes down smooth.
Sparkles and very icy. Goes down smooth. This week, it's midday. So I want to put that out there so that people aren't judging us for not having maybe a hard beverage. So we're all enjoying some soft beverages.
Yeah. Well, I shot up with heroin before I opened my sparkling ice.
Is your sparkling ice laced with heroin? You just kind of dump it in there.
I dump like a packet of fentanyl in there and then I'd slam it. Yeah.
You snort it. I'm enjoying my twice daily traditional beverage of choice to caffeinate my body. A V8 Plus Energy. It's a black cherry flavor, V8 Plus Energy. Delicious. You get like a half serving of fruits, half serving of vegetables, and it tastes wonderful. And it's caffeinated with the green tea. Highly recommended, the healthy way to enjoy caffeine, V8 Energy.
What do we think about the liquid serving of vegetables? Are you buying into that? What does that mean? Like there's a turnip that's pureed in there or what?
I mean, don't they always say like you can't bleed a turnip or something? Isn't there something there?
You can't get blood from a stone. I know that.
I'm not drinking stones here, but isn't there like bleeding a turnip? Brian, help me here. You've probably heard these things.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to come up with that phrase. You can't get something from a turnip.
You can't get no satisfaction.
We're probably conflating that with a stone. Yeah. I don't know what turnips have to offer.
We're stoned. Frankly. Brian just said we're stoned.
But like, do you feel like you're getting fiber and like beta carotenes and things like that, that were like ground up from some kind of vegetable? Are we buying that? Or are they just filling your ear with honey on that thing?
Well, honey is not a vegetable either, but I would just say, don't ask the questions.
Hold on.
Drink the beverage. Don't ask the questions. Drink our stuff.
Okay. Fair enough.
Don't look too closely. Like pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Drink your fentanyl and enjoy it.
Yeah. Get your fill of fentanyl.
Oh, I like this. Yeah. Fentanyl. Okay. Just wrote a marketing slogan for fentanyl. This is good. The shit sells itself, but we can push it.
They need one. Sales are down this quarter. This is horrible. Oh my gosh. So, hey, let's talk about some stuff that people want to listen to. They don't want to hear us blabber for an entire podcast, although we could probably do that. History has shown that we can easily do that.
Oh, sure.
This week, we're going to talk about relationships with exes. And I don't know why that's plural, but I'm just maybe saying because it's an ownership thing. Maybe you have lots of exes. I don't know.
Some people have more than one ex. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to call this X's and O's.
I like it. Yes.
X's and O's.
It's the playbook on having a relationship with your ex. I love it. This is great.
Spelled E-X's and O-H's. I don't know what the O's is referring to. We'll figure that out as we go.
Oh, no. Yeah,
that's what I'm curious about. When are we going to get to the O part?
Oh, man. That's not good. This was so I can cue it up, but I can also have the person that thought about the subject cue it up. So why don't we have John, you thought about this one, right? Was this suggested to you or
I don't know. Brian, you found this on our joint notes, but I don't know where it came from.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was on our joint notes from very early on as an interesting topic, and then conversations that I've been having this week that's on my mind, and you were one of them.
Yep.
So that's, I think that's where this originated. It's a tough thing, right? Like you divorce somebody so that you don't have to have a relationship with them, but then you do have to have a relationship with them if it's about the kids anyways. And
yep.
I think that's one of the hardest parts about moving on is figuring that out.
Oh, absolutely. You break up with a girlfriend or something and then you don't ever have to see each other again.
Easy.
That makes it easy. Yeah, right. You break up with somebody who you have to exchange stuffies and blankies and shit like that every week. You're going to have to see that person and maybe have to go to their space and like be confronted by their new dude or just anything. Any number of potential triggers are available there for you.
Okay, you guys, this is a sidebar thing, but when you mentioned how when you break up with a girlfriend, like that's the end of it, you don't have to see each other anymore. It made me think of something. I had and this is probably like a rule of thumb for guys out there, and like the girls that are listening might giggle a little bit. But when you break up with a girl and you have, and I'll give you a real life example of this too. When you break up with a girl, anything that you had at their place is lost. It's collateral damage. You do not go get it back. I know you might want it back. It might be like something that you want, but it's, you have to spend the money to replace it. You cannot get it back. Like it's, you have to leave it alone. I'll explain why in a minute, but I want to give you my real life example. So like, it's probably like a dozen years ago now, I broke up with this girl and we were in the middle of watching this very nostalgic TV series that used to be on MTV called Fear. And you may not remember this, but it was like MTV would have these participants. It was almost like a game show type of thing, but these participants that they would have like six of them, three guys, three girls, visit the most haunted places in the world.
Okay. Now I remember this. Yep.
Yeah. And they would have to spend like an entire night there while doing like different challenges that they would read off of cue cards from the producers. Like you have to do this now. You have to pretend like you're sitting in a coffin and you're being buried alive. And if you don't complete the task, then you're off the show and you lose your chance at winning a bunch of money or whatever. And like, while they're doing this, like paranormal things happen. It was really interesting. Like I thought it was really cool. Like the stuff that they'd put them through and stuff. I don't know why it got canceled. Maybe because I was the only watcher. Anyway, me and this girl were watching the series and it took a lot of effort by my part to find the series on DVD. And we were in the middle of watching it and we broke up. And I really fucking wanted the series back. So I asked her for it. You know, she broke up with me and like, hey, can you give me that series back? And it just kind of like, it made things really uncomfortable. And she ended up like mailing it to me. And it was like, if there was ever any chance of like that relationship working out again in the future, that destroyed it. It was like this petty fucker wanting his damn MTV Fear, burned copies of DVDs that he got off of eBay.
they were pirated versions of this show.
There was no produced versions of the show that you could buy licensed, so I had to like get it off of eBay from somebody who happened to have recorded the show on a DVR and burned DVD copies
You said this is 12 years ago.
Yeah, probably about a dozen years ago now.
So
yeah,
like 2010. Okay, god damn,
You cheap bastard.
I really wanted it. But yeah, again, it was a life lesson, something I learned that I can pass along to the listeners.
Well,
you let that stuff go, it is lost, unfortunately. Yeah. Even if it's like grandma's engagement ring that you were planning on giving to her.
See, there's a line. I think there's a border there.
Maybe you're right.
Yeah.
So I hadn't heard this bit of wisdom before. So if you're a guy, your stuff's lost. But if you're a girl, then it's totally cool to ask for your stuff.
No, I think it's
back.
Probably lost. I think it's probably lost also as a girl. Like, it depends on like how embarrassed you want to make yourself, how like,
yeah,
how much of a bridge you want to burn. Like, it just kind of like really ends things, you know, it's done.
I don't know. I'm of a different mind on this. Sorry. I'm going to contradict you.
Really.
I think if you were in like an adult mature relationship and you want your shit back, it's okay to ask for it. And if you were in a mature relationship and that person finds your shit in their house, probably they're just going to offer it back.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like it's taboo. I would never. I think that shit's gone for me. But yeah, that's, I like different takes. That's good.
Do you, so when's the last time you watched the Fear shows?
Yeah,
you got that's the thing is I got
you worked
him back.
Hard for those.
Yeah, got you got him in a place of honor on the mantle or anything.
And
like
I had
that?
This reminds me, I had another ex-girlfriend shortly after that one that I got my Dexter TV series back from too. That was actually legitimately Blu-ray, so there was some value in that.
Dexter's a good ass show. Yeah, I'd get that back too.
I never went back to watch them, so it was just kind of like a pride thing, and it wasn't
there's
really
a pattern
about the show.
Here. There's a pattern. Maybe you need a new game other than, hey, let's watch a series together. It'll be fun. It'll bring us closer.
Yeah, let's go more expensive. Let's drive this car together.
Is that your thing? You bring over a series of whatever you think is going to seal the deal and then conveniently leave it at their house?
Yeah, like this is the Costanza for those of you that watch the Seinfeld TV series. Like George Costanza would always leave something behind so that they would remember him and think of him. And he would say, Costanza.
There you go. God.
And it actually worked. It worked for him.
You're a classic, Hurley. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Keep trying. Keep it up.
That's what it was. And then I would ask for it back and ruin all of my progress.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that all of my exes are listening to the show and they're like, yes, I remember when he asked for that back.
Yeah.
Exes what? And O's. Let's get into the materials here. Do one of you guys want to kick us off? Like, which direction do you want to go to start this?
Well, John, why don't you lead us off with you've had some conversations lately. Sure. You were saying like, what's rising to the top in your mind?
I don't remember if we were recording or not yet, but you said something about that. There's no ideal situation, no ideal relationship with your ex. And mm-hmm. that, I guess, that rings real true for me. People want to have like friendly relationships with people they have to deal with. But you know, I think in my case and in many other cases, you've been burned so badly by this person that there's just really no impetus or drive to like forgive or smooth it over or be even in that person's physical presence anymore. I was talking to a friend of mine recently about forgiveness and about like, if your ex it has, you know, some kind of culpability and shows some responsibility for the actions they took during the relationship and you guys can come to like a mutual understanding, that makes it easier to forgive. But if they just, if they're just going to blame you for everything that happened and completely burn that bridge down and scorch the earth, I don't know. Do you owe it to anybody to forgive them? And can you even? You can only give so much of yourself away before it's time to just stop.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's what you would like to do, you know, there's what, and then there's what you can do. And those are rarely the same thing, probably just in general in life. But I'm thinking about it from just a developmental perspective. So bear with me. I'll kind of maybe nerd out a little bit here in that attachment bonds, like human relationship bonds, aren't just a feeling, you know, like they're actually biochemical process in your body where your brain has formed I'm not a neuroscientist, you know, but neural pathways connected with this person, you know, and what they do to you and how you feel about them. And that's based on all of the experiences that you've had with that person. And in the beginning of a relationship, that's a super powerful process. And we can all relate with it because it feels so damn good. You know, it just like, it's like a high. It literally is a high. So that attachment bonding is what I think we're programmed to do. It's what helps us sustain life, you know, like bring new humans in a way that's healthy for the humans. So that's one of the reasons breakups are so hard, because like your brain is used to having this thing and then you have to tear it away. And this thing that used to be safe is now dangerous. And so your brain throws up all these protection mechanisms to try to keep itself safe, make it feel better. But what it does is not the logical, which is, you know, get me away from this person as fast as possible. I mean, it gets there. But the first thing it does is want more of that thing, like to try to feel better, like to keep it, to get it back to a place where it feels good. And it's not a logical, thoughtful thing. So that's the obsessing and the ruminating and the just trying again and again to figure out what happened and what should I have done and how can I fix this and whose fault was it really? And can she change? Can he change? Like all that stuff is about the brain just trying to make itself feel better and not dealing with the reality, which is the relationship's over. Once you get to that point where like in your thinking brain, you know, it's over, that's when I think what we're talking about starts, which is then the wall goes up. It's like, I'm on fucking lockdown. There's no way you're going to get past my wall. And that's, I don't think people can choose whether or not that happens. Like that's just what your body does. Hopefully that's not a permanent state, you know, because we are adults. We can think, we can evaluate what is safe to do in this relationship, what isn't safe to do, what can I rightly forgive for, does not make sense to forgive for. And then you can choose more thoughtfully. And I'm not talking, you know, days or weeks. Like this is months and years that this process takes. It's not quick, just the arc of being able to see yourself clearly and where you're at emotionally, and then read the other person clearly for what's actually dangerous and what's not dangerous. And I could probably be more specific as I'm talking here. There's actually, I just thought of it now, it's a 5-stage model that I came across once upon a time. It was a bit niche.
She was a 5-alarm fire of a model. Yeah.
I didn't see her on the stage. any one of the 5 stages that she I mean, most models are hot, so I'm gonna give her the benefit of the doubt.
Put her on a stage, yeah.
Right. But so it's like the first stage is, you know, walls, communication is horrible. You know, all you can do is written, basically. It's hard to make eye contact or even be in the same physical presence. And then stage 2 starts to loosen up, where you can maybe tolerate a little bit more of that. And stage 3 is a more collaborative relationship, but it's like faking it and just saying the right things. And then stage 4 is loosening up and more friendliness. And stage 5 is, you know, you're at
remarried,
each other's birthday parties, and you know, your new partners are best friends or something. Yeah. Like no, that nobody gets to, in other words, like
that's a unicorn sort of stage 5.
A fantasy stage. But I think there's a lot of usefulness to that, and can give people hope that how you feel now is not how you will necessarily feel in the future. And what's possible now is not the same as what's possible in the future.
Ooh, Brian, and I'd like to add too that how you feel now is not how you're going to feel in the future. That could go both ways in all those stages too. You know, like you might be a stage 4 clinger or a stage 4 in the model. And you might in the future find yourself falling backwards into stage 3 based on whatever turbulent times you're facing as a co-parenting.
Totally. Absolutely. It's like any other growth or healing process. It's not linear, and there's fits and starts, and you go backwards sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that seems emotionally healthy. to be flexible, you know, and not rigid, and to moderate your relationship based on the circumstances, and not just be, this is how it is, you know, take it or leave it.
Yeah. I think about, you know, we always talk on this show about doing things for the kids, and Hurley's favorite quote from, what is it, Hudsucker Proxy? Hurley, yes. For the kids.
That's right. Right? For the kids.
I always think about, we always talk about, you know, doing what's best for the kids, but I think you look into, you know, like, what's the best co-parenting relationship for the kids? And if you want to read some silly articles on the internet, it's all about, like, you know, be okay hanging out with your ex, you know, or for the kids, around the kids, whatever it is. I think that, to me anyway, that's a little bit of a gray area depending on your, mm-hmm. your relationship and where you were. Mm-hmm. I just want to, like, give everybody listening total permission to not have to fucking do that. Because your relationship with that person could be fraught with toxicity and triggers and nonsense. Mm-hmm. And your kids don't need to see you in a state like that. And it might not be great for your mental health moving forward. So whatever mm-hmm. it is, whatever it is you're doing that feels right and feels healthy, just do that. As long as you're not, like, you know, attacking this person or something. Yeah. If you need a wall up and you need zero contact, that's fine. The internet doesn't get to decide how you treat that person or what you do with your life.
Yeah. It's about protecting yourself. And when that stimulus, you know, the other person is so triggering and dangerous to you, then yeah, like, you putting yourself in that position doesn't really serve the kids, because they can read it in you. It feels horrible to them to see you in that state, knowing that it's about their, mm-hmm. your relationship with their mom. But again, like, that's hopefully a stage that makes sense to be in. And then as time progresses and the circumstances change, not saying you specifically, John, but, you know, anyone in that scenario would be open to, you know, am I safer than I think that I am? And mm-hmm. can I push myself in a way that's doable? It has to be doable. You know, you can't mm-hmm. just gut it out or something.
Yeah. Be right. Safe. Protect yourself. It's like a condom for your peace. P-E-A-C-E.
Yeah. Well, a condom, what for else your peace, and a before. Condom for your peace.
What do you use them for?
Pieces. Hey, oh, John, okay. I have some stuff that's right in the pocket with what Brian's talking about, but I need a game show hosty voice guy to set up my segment.
It's time for JP Googles something.
That was good.
How's that?
Wow.
Pretty good. It's like haunting memories of Pat Sajak. Well, Pat Sajak's still alive, but
he can still haunt you, though.
He can still haunt you. Yeah,
I actually went ahead and Googled how to have a good relationship with your ex wife or husband, and
I can't wait to yell at this website. Go ahead.
No, this is a good one. Finally, we have a good one. I think this was the top organically returned search result. And by organically, I mean, I skipped all the ones that were sponsored, like those are people who are paid for ad space, and it's not really having much to do with what I'm asking about. This is by thoughtcatalog.com. We haven't had an entry from them on our show before, but thoughtcatalog.com answers the headline is 8 ways to get along with your ex-husband in parentheses or wife.
Okay.
Like how they put that in parentheses.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we can just kind of, like, I'll pause on each one of these and break them down. And maybe I'll speak to my experience on each one of these first two, and you guys can weigh in. Number one, I don't know if these are in any particular order. Stop bringing up the past. The person that wrote this article talked about how their death stroke for their marriage was infidelity. And she recalls that bringing up anything with the past has always caused things to go from stage 4 to stage 3 pretty easily, to put things in terms that we've already identified in this episode.
Sure. Yep. I agree with that to some extent. I mean, I think the way that person makes you feel is the past is all rolled into that. So you don't need to, like, deep dive into it or ruminate over the past, but it's just kind of the past experiences with that person are just kind of programmed into you. So to some extent, you don't get to decide.
Yeah, Brian, what do you think about that? That seems like sound advice to me.
Well, I think we've talked about this on the show before, probably. If 10% of your energy and focus should be on the past, 10% on the future, and 80% on the present, there's just not a lot of value to going into the past in terms of a functional relationship with a person that's difficult, because it's so likely to be charged. You're going to have different perspectives. There's not a shared reality that's going to be helpful, unless you're maybe talking about a trip to Disneyland that was, you know, the first one for the kids and you stick to the facts.
That was the trip that when she cheated on me, though. So,
yeah. So maybe not talk about that.
Just kidding. Yeah.
Cheated at Disneyland?
It was in the small world.
Right. I was going to say, which one of the seven?
Space Mountain.
Which one of the seven dwarves was this guy?
All of them.
Is this a rocket ship in your pocket?
No.
I knew it was happening because she started sneezing the next day, and I'm like, what's going on here?
Yep.
Number two. Pick your battles. I like this one.
Yeah, don't have any. I don't pick any goddamn. Well, I mean, there could be some battles, I guess.
Oh,
but like,
yeah. Well, and coincidentally, and I'll kind of group these together. Number three is stand up for yourself. So it's kind of perfectly synced. Mm-hmm. Number two and three.
Yeah. Do you have personal experience in this regard, Mr. Hurley?
Oh my God, I do.
Yeah.
There are some things in a co-parenting environment that are worth fighting for. And there's many, many other things that are not. I would say Brian's probably got some sort of percentages. I love that he brings up those percentages, but I would say there's gotta be like, it's gotta be close to like a 90-10 kind of thing. Yeah. I'd say 10% of the shit that you deal with on a daily basis is not worth going, you know, around in circles on. Maybe even less than that. I bet it's 5%.
Let's talk about actual examples of things that are worth going into.
Yeah. So anything, and I'm going to keep this vague because I have specific scenarios that I'm not ready to hash out yet.
Sure.
Until there's resolutions and stuff, and we can probably be in a better position to benefit our listeners. But anything that involves your beliefs that impacts your kids. So like if there's something that your ex is doing or is planning on doing that you think negatively impacts your kids, and that would be a good place to stand up for yourself. Or so that'd be like, so anything to do with the kids, anything. And I think it's really healthy for you to kind of identify boundaries in that dynamic that you have with your ex. For instance, if you've traditionally been kind of walked all over and like, or like your ex has been known to be, you know, to gaslight, to blame shift, a lot of those things. And you want to kind of like set the tone, like even like clearly communicating, like this is a boundary for me. You know, I do not accept what you're doing right now, and let's keep this more professional. Maybe just being tactful about how you stand up for yourself. But I would say any of those types of scenarios where it's like, that's worth the fight for me, you know, like improving my co-parenting life going forward.
I don't know about anything having to do with the kids, though. We talked in an earlier episode about giving up a whole lot of control when you are divorced and are splitting time with your kids. So like, I'll give you a semi-specific example. When I first moved out and started having the kids here half the time, I got a text from my ex about like, I was using the wrong detergent in the washing machine because the kids came home and they were itchy or something like that. You have to use non-scented, and I already was doing the non-scented, and but it was like, are we really going to go into this? I could have made like, I could have said, I am using that and been a real dick or something, but that's having to do with the kids, but is that really something you need to talk about and hash out? I don't know that everything is something you need to discuss.
Yeah. And maybe by everything, I mean anything that's important enough to fight for, you know?
Yeah. Like, I think something having to do with your kids' safety, having to do with your access to the kids, that kind of thing. Yeah. Or if they're like bad mouthing you or something, you're going to have a conversation about that. But like, if it's about, our daughter needs to have 3 fruits in her lunchbox instead of just 2, let's save that shit. You don't need to fuck around with that.
Yeah, I think everything can be brought back to be kind of related or about or impacting the kids potentially. But there's definitely a difference between what's more about the parents and what's more about, like, if the argument or the disagreement is about, you know, like where the pick up and drop off happens, and like the kids are directly involved in that stuff. Like it's their experience you're talking about, not yours so much.
Yeah.
So if it's their experience, and I suppose itchy clothes would be their experience. So, you know, like under that counts. But again, to what degree are we talking here? And is it worth? I have a couple more thoughts about this. Can I keep going?
Yeah, please do.
So when it's like fight your battles, I just a rule of thumb, I think for me is to say yes as often and as much as you can, so that your no's really mean no. And I think a lot of people just instinctually do it differently after a divorce because there's so much kind of wanting to have control and or even wanting to punish through no's, through not giving the other one what they're asking for, what they want. And I just don't think that's helpful. It doesn't really help anything. You're not going to feel better in the end because of it. So say yes as often as you can so that you can say no with much more confidence and credibility. And then the second one I would say is if it's out of your control, you know, like maybe don't, like be very careful about wading into those waters. Like if you ultimately you don't really have a say or it's not about you. Like if they're dating some guy that you think is a douchebag and you're like, this is bad for the kids. And maybe you're right, but that's just not a battle I think to typically fight unless he's a, you know, sex offender or something. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you don't have any control. It's not up to you.
Right. I think about, you know, there's a reason you're divorced from this person and it's probably because you don't see eye to eye on a lot of things. So fully expect that after you're divorced, you're not going to see eye to eye too. Like just because you guys signed some paperwork doesn't mean you're going to agree how to raise the kids now. There's just going to be many, many dozens of decisions that the two of you make that either don't comport with the way the other person thinks or don't have to be run by the other person. And so you really have to let go a lot of control with the day-to-day monotony of the kid stuff, because you just don't get to decide.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, moving on the list here, number four is forgiving your ex and yourself. The writer does mention that this one's not easy and talks about harboring guilt, keep holding on to resentment, like all those types of things can easily create an unhealthy relationship with a co-parent.
Yeah,
great idea.
Amen. Easier said than done.
I would say, don't forgive your ex just to make the co-parenting situation. Like, you have to probably make sure that you're in a place where you can authentically forgive them. Otherwise, it's just not saying the words doesn't give you the feelings.
Right. Right.
No, definitely not. I would also say about forgiveness that you can do that work without having to communicate it to that person too. If it's truly some kind of toxic situation and you want to work on forgiveness, you don't have to send them a letter that says, I forgive you. You can just, if you're not in contact and you're keeping it business-like, keep that on your side of the street. You don't have to share that.
Yeah. Defining terms here, like I think forgiveness is truly forgiveness if it's a two-way street. You know, there's remorse and accountability on one side and a choice to forgive and move on the other side. Like that's what forgiveness is. Mm-hmm. If it's not that, if it's just one person saying, you know what, I'm not going to carry this weight on my shoulders for the rest of my life, that's not helping me at all. So I'm going to just put down this weight. I'm not going to hold this person accountable for their bad behavior anymore. Not going to be in charge of thinking about that or even having a say in it because it's just not my business anymore. That's more like what we call acceptance, accepting reality and not hanging on to grudges or anger that just doesn't do you any good. And I think that's so interlaced in any kind of breakup divorce situation. Like, there's couples that are really good at being accountable and amicably separating, you know, the whole what's the term, good divorce, compassionate decoupling or something.
Conscious decoupling.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Uncoupling, conscious uncoupling. So, you know, like that's a scenario where maybe people can truly forgive each other and themselves. But I think most of us walking around are like accepting, hey, I did the best I can. It wasn't always great, but I've learned a lot and I'm going to forgive myself because it doesn't do good to be angry at myself or guilty. And I'm going to do the same for my spouse because as shitty as I was treated, you know, like she was probably doing the best she could too. And, you know, good luck the next time around. Glad it's not me, but I'm not going to hang on to the anger.
Can you talk, Brian, maybe about some action steps for acceptance? Is there a path there?
It is. Well, I think you have to decide that you want it. Like, I think that's actually a step number one, to decide this is realistically something I want to shoot for. And second would be to what I just said, like decide what was this person doing the best that she or he could. Now that can be pretty bad, you know, like her best could be pretty horrible because of childhood trauma or horrible parents that taught her that, or consumer culture that teaches us all to be like the Kardashians, blah, blah, blah. Like there's lots of reasons, but they're not, she's a horrible person and she did this to me on purpose. Now that happens. Like there are people, maybe 1 out of 100 that are evil, you know, and they do it on purpose and they want control and they want to harm. We talked about that in the narcissist. Yeah. But most people are just, you know, kind of bumbling around, like, you know, myself included, doing the best we can, trying to see in the dark and hope to get it right enough of the time.
So, but in terms of acceptance, does it matter their intentions, whether you accept the situation or not? You see what I'm getting at a little bit?
But yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Okay. I see. No, it doesn't matter.
So like if they are a pure evil narcissist, you still have to find some way to accept the situation and move on.
Yeah.
And I think that's really difficult. And that is the borderline between forgiveness and acceptance. I really like the distinction there because you're talking about somebody who owns up to their shit and it's just way easier to have like a shared story, like we always talk about. But if they truly are non-repentant and still put everything on you, and you have to still find a way to accept the situation fully, accept what happened, accept that you didn't deserve it, and still find a way to move on without ruminating and thinking about it all the time. It's not easy.
Well said. And here's what I'd add, that knowing reality, like being really clear about what's real and write it down, put it on your phone, look at it when you need to, like, this is what's real. I did the best I could. That's real. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't, but it wasn't my choice. It wasn't up to me. That's real. She's evil and there's nothing I can do to change that. I tried my best. It's not about me. Like that's real. Like reminding yourself of reality instead of the circles that your brain has been going in for years about this should be better, this shouldn't be happening, I should be able to fix it, why is she so mean, like maybe it's me, like all that stuff, which isn't reality. It probably wasn't then and it's not now.
Yeah. Can I ask you about the it's not about me? Because that sometimes you know, I know that path or thought process or whatever, but sometimes that feels so dismissive. Like,
oh, like it wasn't about me, feelings about it,
but sure got fucking done to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about the motivation, you know, because, when we perceive that people are mistreating us out of intention, you know, or it's like, because we're not liked or good enough or valuable enough. It's, you know, like if I am sitting around and no one's calling me to hang out on the weekend, I'm like, oh, I must be a bad friend or something. Like no one's reaching out to me. It's not about me, even though the feeling sucks. They're not reaching out to me because they got their own lives and they're probably sitting in their own house wondering why no one's reaching out to them, thinking I must not have any friends like I thought I had. So That's what I mean. It's not to say that you shouldn't have feelings about it. It affects you, but the intention It's not about you. Another person's actions have nothing to do with you. It has to do with them and their immaturity or evilness. One of the two. Or both.
I like that. You guys ready to move on? Number five. Maintain a healthy sense of understanding and compassion. Man, these are good. These are a bunch of, I have to get better at a lot of these things. The context is they may not deserve it. They may not appreciate it, but there's something to be said for behaving amicably, even when the other party won't.
I'll go first here, John. So do. I agree with every single word of that, but it's not black and white. Like, it takes time. Like, you got to give, like, be kind to yourself if you can't do it. But don't give up either. Like, assume that you can get there when you can get there. And then be open and try.
Yeah. I think these are like, this brings to mind, like, ripping off a Band-Aid a little bit. You get a request from them for something, and if you just put yourself in the mindset of just do it and get it off my plate and move on with your day, that's for me the best way to handle something like that, right? So, hey, can you drop off the kid's lunchbox, throw it in the car, drive it over there, drop it off, get back to my life as soon as effing possible so that I'm not thinking about it, so that it doesn't occupy my day, so that it's not something I have to do tomorrow. Just do it, be done with it, accept it, move on.
Here we go. Number six. And this is one I probably struggle most with out of all these on here. Avoid becoming immediately defensive.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So like, I'm just thinking about like the interactions and, you know, admittedly all my interactions are having to do with the kids, and they are like text messages, like, we need to add lunch money to the lunch account or bring the lunchbox over, or I guess everything has to do with lunch. But anyway, if you can't immediately in the moment say yes to it, then let it sit for a minute. Don't immediately say no to something. Right
have
away.
Lunch first and then
have lunch answer, first. Yeah. Don't be hangry. But I think you can, like, if you're feeling like your shoulders are up around your ears when this person reaches out to you about something, and you can get, this is why I really like written communication versus in-person communication, because all the triggers can be kind of smoothed out if you just sit and breathe with it for a minute. In the moment, you have like all the body language and the things like that, and they're saying something to you and you might feel defensive, and then you react and there's a feedback loop, and then it's all downhill from there. But if you get written communication from this person and you feel defensive, you can notice that in the moment and you can just sit with it. If they're standing in front of you and they start talking to you about something and you feel defensive and you just stare at them, that's going to get fucking awkward. Right.
While eating your lunch.
Right.
Don't let your dumb brain do the talking. Take some deep breaths, take a little walk, and then talk with your smart brain. Don't let your dumb brain work for you.
I like that. Yeah. And I would say maybe even practice that with every response, because sometimes I'll get defensive without knowing I'm getting defensive and I'll just shoot something off right away. So almost with, be really deliberative with every response when it comes to like written communication, text communication.
You and I have done this too, JP. We have sent our potential response to each other first, and then you will That's look good. At it and go like, yeah, don't do that. Just write this. And then you'll write like a changes. Very simple forward response. And then I just write that and it's fine.
Yep. I've had entire books of responses sent to John. He's like, that's going to be not well received. You should shorten it. And I'm like, yeah, he's probably right. So then like I shorten it by like 80%. Yep.
Yep.
So well, good.
Just cut the middle out usually. Take the beginning and the end.
When I'm coaching co-parents, because that's one of the things I do, I make them in their written communication start with, you know, dear Jane, thanks for the message, period.
Wow.
And then go on. And then they have to end with, you know, have a good day. Like it has to be some sort of colloquial good nicety. Yeah. Hate it. Like I can just see that they hate that, which I get. I mean, I have compassion. But that's just putting in a cue to take a deep breath. Don't fire off and be careful with your words.
It sounds like a soldier writing home to his loved one from the Civil War. Yeah. My dearest Martha.
It is so, it's so clear to everyone that's fake. But again, there's a reason for it.
I love that. Number seven, maintain a healthy distance. Now, this one's a little bit more situational. I think it's probably smart overall, but the person that's writing this article cites the fact that it's important for her to remain kind and understanding towards her ex, but not sending the wrong messages. Like, you know, our marriage is over, our relationship is over, not crossing the line of sending the wrong messages through the kindness and understanding. But I do think that this could be taken for something else. I think not inundating yourself with having to be in each other's faces all the time would be my interpretation of maintaining a healthy distance. And I really like that piece of advice.
Yeah, I like that a lot too. I think every person, every couple, former couple, has to kind of stamp out that ground for themselves, how much contact is appropriate and how much is not. So yeah, definitely. If it feels like, I'll give you an example. If this person comes over to your house to drop things off and just walks in and is walking through your house and that doesn't feel good to you, say so. Put up
that
a boundary.
That is not a healthy distance.
That is not a healthy
Miller,
distance.
Miller, would you say that would be a place where you'd stand up for yourself, number three?
I can say it's a place I have stood up for myself.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, like, and there's I've worked with people where they're too close, you know, like they want to be friends still and lean on each other for support. And it just doesn't work very well to do that. Like, even if it feels right, it's usually someone being a little codependent and not moving on that's driving that.
What's the impetus for the other person to allow that to continue, though? Are they getting a level of like manipulation, or are they able to dictate things that they wouldn't otherwise be able to?
Well,
why put up with that?
For every codependent person that's sort of needy and can't separate, there's the other side that feels good being needed, and they kind of feed off of it, even though it's not healthy.
Gross.
Yeah. And it, you know, that includes sex too. Like, hookups after divorce are pretty common, I think.
Gross.
Which is crazy. It's not crazy. It's like what the body does, you know. Makeup sex is pretty awesome.
It wasn't me. It was my body. Okay.
Yeah, but bad idea. That's not gonna help you feel good about yourself the next day.
No. Yeah, that'll be tough to say. Unless you're getting back together, then feel free, go nuts.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
You guys were kind of in the waning moments of the podcast, believe it or not. This time has kind of flown by. We got one more. We got the final note on the Google something in the thought catalog here. We've got Brian Burns' burning question of the podcast. We've got final thoughts with Miller. So finishing things off here. Number eight, let go of jealousy. She goes on to say, I can now honestly say that I want nothing but good things for my ex, partially because I don't think that he is this terrible, evil person who deserves only misery and hardship. But also, this is because the happiness is in direct correlation with my children's happiness.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I'm ruminating on that. I'm thinking about that. It's hard to wish all good things for someone who burned the shit out of you. The jealousy, what's the saying about jealousy? Is it like, it's like a poison that you take yourself or something? You know what I mean?
Because about sayings before this podcast too. We need Miller to, what's the other one too, Brian?
The turnip and the stone and the blood.
No, it was during, like, you and I talked before the podcast and we were trying to think of what the saying was on,
Oh, revenge is
no, that's,
you
a,
know what they say about revenge.
No, that you, Listen yeah, that's that? A different one. That's a dish best served cold. I know that one, but
sure. Ooh, no, remorse? Jealousy is like a poison that you give yourself. Is it jealousy? It's something anger. About it's a poison you drink yourself and you expect the other person to die. What is that? Isn't that jealousy?
Jealousy is a disease and love is a healthy condition.
That's all. That's nonsense.
What are the sayings?
I don't know. Anyway, jealousy is hard, man. We talk about jealousy a little bit if we have the time, because that's real tough. Like, you see your ex, you know, with somebody new, or you see them succeeding in life, and you know, it's like, oh, it's hard not to put yourself in a place of they're able to do that because they're not with me. This dead weight of a me, you know, that's hard.
Yeah. Hey, jealousy is not a disease. Jealousy is a feeling, you know, like it's a natural feeling when you care about something. Like I'd be jealous if my wife was into some other guy. Like doesn't make me insecure and weak. It makes me in love with her. So it's just what you do with that feeling. Like if you decide that it's something you want to keep feeling or do something about versus, you know, it's normal to feel jealous. Like I wish that I was having that experience with her. Like, that's why wouldn't I have that feeling? But it's not something I'd want to hold on to for very long and then let it go and think about something else.
Yeah. What's action steps for that? Just worry about your own, like find some kind of a goal to strive for on your own and be happy that you achieve it and
gratitude.
Just kind of work on that.
Probably a gratitude practice, you know, where your five things you're grateful for every day.
Yeah.
Write them down until you have 500 after 100 days.
Nice. Hey, jealousy. Isn't that a song? Hey, jealousy.
It is. Yeah. Okay. Couldn't tell you who.
Probably like the Counting Crows or some shit.
Might be.
I'm going to Google that quick just to finish off the
joke. Okay. It's time for JP Googles an artist.
I do have a burning question, JP.
I love it. By the way, the song is by the Gin Blossoms. Dang it.
That makes sense. Sure.
I was going to say the Foo Fighters only because
it's up a time. It's all
the only
time.
Band that came to my mind.
That's right. Okay. I mean, so John, why don't you set up the burning question of the podcast with the sound of your voice?
Announcer voice?
Yeah.
It's time for Brian Burns burning question.
Thank you, John. Thank you. Good to be here. So I've been anticipating this for several days because I talked to a client who is doing fantasy football. And JP, you know about fantasy football, correct?
I'm a guru.
Okay. I knew I'd be asking the right person. Burning question is, what is the role of an assistant general manager on a fantasy football team? Because when I heard that was a thing, I'm like, number one, that doesn't seem real. And number two, what the hell?
I believe the title is assistant to the general manager, but I will say that is not an incredibly common scenario. It's probably where somebody is co-managing a team together. Like typically there's, it's like a co-general manager, co-manager, but they probably have the one person like pays the entry fee and then uses like somebody else like bounce trade ideas off of and makes decisions on free agency and starting lineups and stuff like that for their, that's having an assistant is not something that you hear too much of. That's a little bit ridiculous.
Well, so tell me what you think about this. The context that I heard this was by a 3M employee. We live close to 3M headquarters and he was all up in arms because status is such a huge thing in a corporation like that, you know, the hierarchy. And he's like, the higher you are in the company, if you are on into fantasy football, then you have an assistant general manager who does all the trading and you just get the credit.
Yeah.
That's so funny. So it probably could be like the one guy is just fronting the money and then he's got like a real like shark that's making all the moves for him. So like that could be what that is.
Or it's like their executive assistant who's already scheduling their emails and their meetings and their shit. I'll also manage my trades too while you're at it.
Yeah, no pun intended with the 3M company here, but that situation can get a little bit sticky with the other owners in the league.
Thank you for nailing that. You reminded me, Brian, when I started playing football in seventh grade, on the first tryout summer of seventh grade football, I got my position and the position they assigned me was back. I was very small. I was very small in seventh grade. They assigned me backup left tackle, which to me just feels like they want you to go fuck off. That's what it sounds like when you say assistant to the manager in a fantasy football team. It just sounds like this will go fuck off. Whatever.
That's so good. Every left tackle needs an assistant to it. So you got to have a backup. Assistant backup left tackle.
What if that left tackle, what if that seventh grade left tackle goes down like heart attack, right? Or something.
Oh, you'd be in. I'm ready, coach.
Put me in, coach.
You'd be in. Okay. Now it's that time of every show where I want our listeners to kind of like sit down, relax a little bit, maybe take a sip of water, and just kind of like relax your ears because it's time for the final thoughts with Jonathan Miller.
Okay, final thoughts today. Our topic has been dealing with your ex, relationship with your ex. I mentioned it before, but I'll say it again. This is somebody who you weren't able to work out a romantic relationship with. So don't be surprised if the non-romantic relationship is troublesome and difficult as well. It's a different thing, and you're building something that's not what it used to be. So give yourself some grace in that regard. It's going to take some give and take to figure out where each of your boundaries are, what each of you is available for, what's triggering and what's not, what feels bad when they bring it to you and what doesn't, and what they get triggered by when you bring it to them. So just all of that stuff. Don't expect this because you've signed some paperwork. All of a sudden you guys are going to be best friends and like the greatest co-parents on the planet. The relationship was troubled before, and it's not just going to be fixed after your divorce. So give it some time and try to be thoughtful and respectful to yourself and that other person as much as you possibly can.
I like it.
Amen.
You guys, that's all we got. We want to say thank you so much for listening this week. And I want to just put a little bit of an extra thing at the end here. Follow us on Twitter. Obviously, it's at Bad Weather Pod on Twitter. And make sure on any listening platform that you're on, whether it's Podbean or Spotify, whatever, drop us a like and a comment. If you happen to comment on us, I will make sure that at the end of each episode, give like some shout outs to people that have made comments on previous episodes. We really like to hear from you to find out like if this is something that you're getting value from, if you like it. I will give a shout out this week to a gentleman named Alex Shafiro. Always reaches out to me on the Facebook Messenger to kind of give some notes on previous shows. And that stuff's kind of beneficial just to know that we're saying and doing the right things to position ourselves to be in the place to help you the best. So thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for reaching out,
Alex. Yep. Much appreciated. Thank you for listening, Alex, and the rest of you guys. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Take care of yourself.
I want to forget my bad days, all my bad days, and be okay, spend my spare change down at the arcade, and then I'll say everything sucks.
Got it.
God, that's you, a sexy lady. Voice, isn't it?
Yeah, give it to me, baby. Say it slower.
Recording in progress.
Recording in progress.
Recording in progress. It's like a.
That's like 8-bit Nintendo. Who's frustrated.
Recording in progress. This is just how I talk. Recording in progress. 8-bit double dribble game on Nintendo.
Yeah.
Double dribble.
Don't tell me how to relax. This is how I relax. I'm super relaxed.
Relaxing in progress.